and welcome to the High Ground podcast. My name is Clee Stacey and I am a life coach.
My name is Anthony Turi. I am a therapist, and for six episodes we're going to be chewing over what coaching is, what therapy is, and our different takes on spirituality and personal development. Hello.
Hello.
Hi, Clee.
Exciting. I'm very excited.
Really good. Really good to be here. Yeah. This is a conversation I've been wanting to have with you for a while.
Absolutely. Yeah. Mm. So just to get clear on the people listening, my name's Clee. I'm Clee Stacey. I am a life coach and I help, well, it's funny because I say on my Instagram profile at the moment, I help women in their 30s with self-worth and relationships and career, but actually I do have half my clients are men, so that's an interesting point. But I love to help people feel more themselves, find out who they really are, and most of all come to a point of ease and flow and have the, what they want through that. Not a pushy, forceful, shovey thing, because I see a lot of people doing that, and I am interested in that, and I don't want anyone else to be, frankly. So that's what I do. Who are you?
I am Anthony Turi. I'm a gestalt psychotherapist, which means I work with adults. I practice a branch of humanistic therapy called gestalt therapy, which I'll explain a bit about. So I'm excited about this because I think we're both in similar professions. There's also some interesting differences between us, and
big time.
Interesting chewing over that. But I guess we're both interested in higher ground, helping people get up to the next level, leveling up. And I know we've both got similar spiritual beliefs, which don't necessarily come into our work, but that's a point of compatibility and overlap between us as well. So I'm really interested in chewing over some of this stuff with you.
Me too. And so I guess it's useful to point out at this point that we've got six episodes lined up for us with general ideas and topics, which are all, again, around finding higher ground and being our best selves and how we do that within our own professions, within our own lives, very personally and professionally, and kind of how they overlap. And today we thought we'd jump in with the coach, the therapist, how that works together and not. And like you said just now, like you've noticed how I don't have a thing against therapy. I mean, I've studied psychotherapy and I did a foundation in psychotherapy and counseling. And when people ask me, how did you get into coaching? That's where I started. Actually, like I don't hate therapy. I possibly sound like I do sometimes, but I definitely don't. I definitely know that there is a place for it.
In some of your Instagram stories, you've expressed a very healthy skepticism of the therapy profession.
Yes. Yeah. Well, I love this conversation already because it's like having me challenge me why I feel that way. And it's big time. My dad was in therapy for 20 years. If you're in therapy for 20 years, something's not working. Or it might have been, you know, my dad.
I agree.
Not doing the working. But, you know, for me, if you're in therapy for 20 years, there's got to be at some point that a therapist goes, you know, from a professional point of view, if the client isn't moving forward and isn't getting happier, then what's happening here? How, you know, what is the client doing or not doing that's not helping themselves? Not even necessarily taking responsibility as a therapist, or a coach, which obviously we do. The work is all in the client. But if the client isn't doing the work, that's the conversation that needs to be had from my point of view. And yeah, I'm pissed off and angry and resentful that my dad was in therapy for 20 years, but that's about my dad, not necessarily the therapy itself. So I do acknowledge that.
I mean, I think there's some very useful overlap that we're going to have in this discussion. And I hope to maybe Well, on the one hand, ease some of your skepticism because I share some of your skepticism.
Yeah.
And I want to emphasize that I'm a gestalt psychotherapist. And I think because of that, I've got a lot of overlap with you. I have prepared a quote. This is by Fritz Perls.
Oh, who
is
I love that man.
Yes. And there's also some other things about him which we could be skeptical of. But his one of my favourite quotes of his is, if you want to play games, go to a psychoanalyst and lie there on his couch for years, decades and centuries. So Fritz Perls and the other founders of Gestalt were coming from a place of skepticism with therapy as it had been practiced.
Yeah.
And so your point about somebody spending 20 years in therapy is something that is valid. Mm. And I think there's a lot of potential overlap between Gestalt psychotherapy and coaching. So, yeah. But why don't you start by outlining what you do?
Yeah.
I'll explain a bit about what Gestalt therapy is, and then we can have a bit of a tussle.
So... The reason I got into coaching and didn't go down the psychotherapy route was because it felt a lot like there was a lot of talking and not a lot of action. And there was a lot of looking backwards and talking about things over and over and over again. And I didn't want to do that as a professional. Like I knew that I would get bored of having the same conversation over and over again, as well as not seeing improvements in clients. And having been a client of psychotherapy, having therapy with a few different therapists, I got really bored of talking about the same things over and over again and not feeling any different, nothing shifting. And I wanted to find, but I also knew that talking things through was really helpful. When it was in a challenging, loving format, and that's what I was looking for, and I wanted it. There was something about it that was almost too professional. The professional is not the right word. The boundaries were almost too much. The distance between me and the therapist felt unsafe. Actually, like it created a space, too much space. Like, too much separation rather than space to be filled with what I needed to fill it with. And so there's something about coaching that is just that bit more open for me. Challenge, it feels more challenging. It feels more loving. There is something about the boundaries that I can tell my clients I bloody love them. Like, and I can go hang out with them if I want. You know, of course there are boundaries. And they're clients, not friends, but there is a client element and a friend element with a lot of my clients. And even in that practice of having them as clients and as friends, like I have to practice and they have to practice that boundary of, okay, this is a friend conversation, this is a client conversation. And I'm kind of going a little bit off topic here, but that's why I enjoy coaching. But what I love about it from as a client, because I don't know how many active coaches I have, 2 one-to-ones, 3 one-to-ones and 1 group coaching. Coaching gives, to me, it's what I've said before, it's a loving ass kicking. And so it's all about questions, which obviously comes up in therapy as well. But there's actions to be taken. And it, you know, coaching is very goal driven in many ways, and it's future thinking, forward thinking, what do you want and how are we going to get there? And I think that is one of the big differences between therapy and coaching, is that coaching is very much about what do you want, how do we get you there? Even if it's a feeling that you want, that's what we're working towards. Some people, a lot of people come to me with, I want the relationship, I want the career, I want to feel this way. But it's always down to the feeling. That's always my question is, okay, I want to get really clear with you on what you want. But more, I want to know, and I want you to get clear on, what is the feeling that you think that thing is going to get you, and how can we get you there quicker? And that's why the results come quicker, because it's actually much easier to get the feeling of the thing you want than the thing you want itself. But when you get the thing that you want, when you get the feeling that you want, the thing comes quicker. And it's people think you need to get the thing before you get the feeling, but it's actually the exact opposite way around. Once you get in the feeling, the vibration of what you want, that thing will just flow in with ease. That's one of our other conversations, that small law of attraction. But it's that kind of that again, that's I guess where that comes into my work. But yeah.
Thank you. That's a really clear explanation of what you do. There's a few points I made notes on to speak back to them, and I can see how there is difference, but I think there's overlap in what we do. And your first point about the skepticism about talking about the past endlessly, this is something that the founders of Gestalt Therapy were very interested in, and they explicitly started out with a here now focus in the work. They said it wasn't about lying on a psychoanalyst's couch for years, and it isn't necessarily about traipsing over the past. A lot of Gestalt therapists talk about, you know, the story, let's not get lost in the story. Mm-hmm. And we have an explicitly here now focus in our work. So we say, okay, well, you know, that's what happened to you. How are you feeling as you talk? Tell me about it now. What is happening for you right now in this moment? And I think there's overlap with your work, because we think that the relationship between therapist and client in the moment is where change takes place. Get your point as well about your skepticism about excessive talking. Well, there is a place for talking. And we over in Gestalt were one of the first to emphasize the body. I mean, these guys started out in 1951, and Pearls and his cohorts, they took some of the body work that had been done at the time by William Reich, and they explicitly placed it at the center of their approach. They said, okay, where are you feeling that? What is happening? And, you know, what's your leg doing? You know, what's your arm saying now? So we've definitely worked with the body. I like your point about challenge. And challenge always has to exist with alongside safety. So something one of our terms is we call in the session, we call it creating the safe emergency. So you create enough support with the client for them to experiment with different ways of being. So you've got an example of that. It would be, well, I'm feeling frustrated with how I'm talking to somebody in my life. So, and once they feel safe enough, we can experiment with them talking to that person in a different way, addressing that person differently. Or speaking about themselves in more positive ways, and just kind of playing. And something we do a lot of is experiments. You know, how would it be for you to hold your body in a different way as you said that? Or I noticed you're, you know, turning in as you say that. Could you do that more? Could you expand? I totally get your point about the relationship between you and your clients. And we emphasize one of the centerpieces of Gestalt therapy is contact, which is that the contact is basically where you meet what is not you. That sounds a bit abstract, but it's basically there are some therapeutic approaches where it's just, you know, you tell a person about what's going on in your life and they respond, whereas we put the relationship between therapist and client right at the center. And it's how you show up with the client and how the therapist is impacted, how the client is impacted. So that's there as well.
I love that.
And there's one of my favorite quotes. I came with quotes. Always. So this is by Rick Heister and Lynn Jacobs, and they're at the forefront of the relational approach to Gestalt. Mm-hmm. And we probably differ from you guys in terms of we have much less of an emphasis on goals. But this is why I think our different approaches are much more, it's a kind of horses for courses type thing.
Yeah.
So that one of my favorite quotes is, the human heart yearns for contact. Above all, it yearns for genuine dialogue. Each of us secretly and desperately yearns to be met, to be recognized in our uniqueness, our fullness, and our vulnerability. And that always gets me, that quote. Mm. And so for me, there's something about just being received and accepted and met on a felt level by somebody can be very, very transformative. And I know in my training, I've had to have therapy. And I've had different types of therapy, and I've had therapy with very, very experienced therapists. But the most powerful experiences for me were ones where I just felt I was got. There's that phrase, the felt sense of being felt. And in a way, that was one of the most transformative experiences of my life. Mm. Just feeling I was being felt and got. So I think there's something to be said for just that, and I would wager, from what I know of you, that there's something about just the presence you offer your clients and the way you show up for them, that in itself is very, very impactful for them. So
yeah. And you know what's interesting is that still gets me, even though you're totally right. When I think back to therapists or coaches that I've had, when they are telling me what they think I should do, or what, even when they're reflecting things back, like, I say it all the time, it doesn't just matter what you say or the actions that you take, it's the energy and the intention that comes with it. Because you just know when someone's reflecting something back at you and they feel it, or they don't, and they're acknowledging that they don't understand. And that's in itself powerful, because it's real and true, rather than just doing it, reflecting for the sake of reflecting, because you know it's what your job is.
Yeah.
And so actually being in the conversation, being in it, I don't understand you, but I really want to. Please help me understand more. That for me is the same as being heard. Not quite the same, but it's on the same field, because you care, you're there. And I mean, I feel like I'm bigging myself up here, but it's
big up.
It's
big away. That's what we're here for.
It feels very normal and natural for me to just do that, and to really get someone and be with them and be present to them and have them acknowledged for being them, because that's what I know works for me, so that's why I give it. And to be honest, sometimes I forget that that's a big piece of what I give, and that's because I think everybody gets in their own head about what they do sometimes, and wanting to do better and do more. And it's easy when you're just good at something to forget that you're good at it, just because that's just what you do.
I mean, I've had a number of conversations with you before this podcast, and I've always had a sense of your presence, you know, in the way you show up, and you're, we'd say, available for contact. Mm. And I think that's something that when I'm on my game, I bring to my work. And some of my most powerful sessions and most transformative for my clients have just been where I've just been there, present at the contact boundary, available for them. And so We very much talk about, here comes a nice word, the spirit in which the work takes place. We draw on another guy we draw on is a philosopher called Martin Buber. He was a philosopher of religion, and he spoke about two ways of relating. There's I-it and there's I-thou. And I-it is, I am looking at you as an object, and I'm just thinking about you and having my thoughts about you in abstract terms. Mm-hmm. So I am telling you information and you're a person over there. And then there's I-thou, which is a real, I'm showing up here in my deepest human way with a deep respect for you as another human being. And I really want to reach into your world and try and understand it. And I want to be as available to you from the core of my being. And both ways of being are important. You can't just live in one mode all the time. But there's something about, we call it having I-thou moments. And we kind of had a mini one just there, me and you, I think, where as I was talking about an I-thou moment, I really had a feeling of you getting it. And for people who are available to an I-thou moment, just having that experience of being met, and for me, I would say, not all Gestalt therapists would, but on a kind of soul level, that kind of I'm being received fully. That in itself is just massively transformative.
Yeah, massively transformative is because I think we all have those moments, but most people don't have many of those moments.
Yeah.
And I think when you're with someone else who sees it and creates more of it, like they create space for more of it, you realize that you are capable and have more access to it than you thought before. And whether you call it soul, spirit, and we'll get onto this in further episodes, but for me, it's, you can call it whatever you want, but it's, again, felt sense, it's feeling. Like, and that's why I think what you do and what I do, and for me, not all coaches go this way. There are a lot of coaches who don't touch on anything feely, or it's all head-based and it's all goal-orientated and all of that stuff. So there is something there. But for me, it's all body felt. It has to be. That's where we live. And any time that we deny that and we're all up here in our heads, that's where shit goes down. And that's why therapy and coaching for me is so the most powerful stuff, when you get out of your head and you get into your body. And that doesn't just, and the body isn't like, it is the physical body, but it's not the physical body. It's, the body is a tool, a piece of equipment with which you use to feel. If that makes sense. We are taught to see our body as this physical material piece of equipment that just helps us move around. And yes, I feel pain, and yes, I feel this thing, and yes, when I'm sad, I cry. But it's very, like, even that conversation is very head-based. And okay, I acknowledge, and that even all the books that are written about the body-mind connection, but so many of them are written from the head. So they're even written from thoughts and head thoughts and brain thoughts, and they're not even, so much is written without being felt, said without being felt, and the work happens in the feeling. And I've just started working with this incredible, and she doesn't even call herself a coach, she does body work. I don't even know what to call it, because it's so about feeling. I literally am working with her because I want to learn how to feel more deeply. I want to learn how to get through my feeling more, not get through it. That's, again, that's like old conditioning. Got to get through the feeling, got to make sure the feeling's moved. And it's this real like force. Oh God, I don't want to feel sad. I don't want to feel anxious. I don't want to feel depressed. Of course. Again, old conditioning. Of course I don't want to feel that way. When actually it's just a moving through. What you do, what I do, my, you know, your modality of therapy is not the same as every modality. That's particularly Gestalt and Cleath coaching is not the same as other coaching. It's very much what I do. I bring in body and felt sense and feeling, because that's all there is. Like, there is more, but for me, what I come to realize is that our brains are how many years old? Like, in evolutionary terms, I have no idea. I'm going to research on this and come back when we actually do a podcast. I think it's number 5 on the brain. But for me, it feels like if you think about it logically, let's get into our brains for a second. Our brains, in the way that they exist, that the new part of our brain, the front bit, is only a few thousand years old, a couple of million at best, compared to our physical bodies, like the rest of the animal kingdom, where it's used to feel through things. It's just without thought. The body is just feelings happen, emotions happen, different states happen, and then we move through them. And then we use our brain and we think our brain is the newest bit and therefore the best bit because it's come along most recently. And actually, the old bit works just bloody fine. But we're trying to feel through our head, and you can't feel through your head because that's not what it's meant for. We can do more impressive things. We can build society. We can do incredible maths. We can send people to the moon. You can't send people to the moon based on feeling. Like, of course, right? But what do you go to the moon, and what do people say when they get there and they look down? Let's talk about the feeling. That even when you achieve those things, when you achieve community and civilization, what do you do it for? We have civilization, and now I feel safe. Anything we even build on using our brain, this is why I'm happy to create goals of stuff and things and experiences, but ultimately it's only to create a feeling. So I don't want to bypass a feeling. I also don't want to bypass the goal, because that's kind of part of the fun. That's like, we want to talk about law of attraction. That's kind of what it is. Like, the beauty of creation, the beauty of living, isn't just to sit in the feeling of joy and peace and just sit there all the time. I'm sitting in joy. Like, that's, you know, we are humans. It gets a bit boring. Let's go and do some stuff and have goals and to fuck up and have problems and contrast. It's all fun, but it is still all about the feeling. So, yeah, feeling.
And as always, there's so much in what you've been saying, which is why I always enjoy our conversations. It's very rich and there's a lot in there. And the first thing I'd say is your emphasis on the body, absolutely. And often when I hear people talking about the body, now there's a little part of me which feels, you know, like someone who's like a football supporter. It's like, well, Gestalt got there first. Or when you're into a band before they become popular, you're like, we were talking about the body back in the 50s. I had their album before anybody else was into them. You know, I saw that band when they were playing toilets. Yeah. But so we've always placed the body right at the center. And there is a very interesting tension in any type of work like we're doing, between, because we've touched on the issue of just being accepted for who you are and how that is transformative, and then there's the issue of goals. It's interesting that you yourself are seeking, you know, support to just become more accepting of your own feelings, and that is something that is at the center of the Gestalt approach. We have something called the paradoxical theory of change, which is basically, if you try to change by being something you're not, you won't change. You have to absolutely start with acceptance of where you are. And only through acceptance of where you are, this is written by a guy called Beiser in the 1970s. Once you fully accept where you are, change naturally occurs. Just because all life is movement, all life is change anyway. But only when you're standing solidly in where you are, can you then move. If you're trying to be what you're not, you've got one foot where you are and one foot where you're not, and you're not really stable. It's only through complete acceptance of where you are that change can naturally arise. So we very much place acceptance of where you are at the center of our approach. At the same time, I guess we differ from you in that there's less of an emphasis on goals, but even there, we develop contracts with clients. You know, there are things we seek to work on. Probably maybe less strategically, as you guys would, but I think there's a lot of valid overlap in what we do. The other thing is, as well, is I used to joke when I was training, but Gestalt therapy is the therapy for therapists who are a bit skeptical of therapy, because if you're a bit skeptical of therapy, it's a good therapy to practice, because we don't want to just sit around and just get lost in the story. We don't just want to rehash the past. But equally, sometimes people do need to just talk about what's happened to them. And I would wager that sometimes in your sessions, you have to let your clients go long on telling you their story. Because even in being heard, maybe sometimes for the first time, maybe in sharing a deeply felt experience and telling that story without being interrupted for 10 minutes, that in itself can be transformative. It's like, oh, here's someone who heard me. Obviously, we don't want to do that for years and years. If you can tell the story and be felt in the telling of the story and know you're being felt, I mean, and that takes us back to the body again, right? There's a resonance, there's a feeling of being felt in that moment.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yesterday, who the first part of the session, we created a bit of a weekly plan for her, which is funny because I know that that's something I used to struggle with, and I needed someone to help and sit me down and do it. And it was such a strange session because it's quite practical and still like, okay, where, because I try and help some people create a structure for them rather than get a structure from someone else and realize it doesn't bloody work because it's someone else's structure. Again, find your own structure, create. So lots of questions creating her structure, but quite still head-based, practical, feeling into what feels good, but you know, for the practical daily stuff. And then, as you'll know, as a therapist, it's often near the end of the session when you go, so is there any, you know, anything else you want to share? And that's where everything comes out. And then this piece came out and it was very felt. And one of the things we are working on is her ability to feel. And I think I'd probably forgotten that the best way to do that is just through conversation and allowing her what she needs to come up. And for me, it's so normal for that stuff to happen. And she said by the end, I said, you know, what's the biggest takeaway? And she said, I think, once again, just having a space to say things that I've never said before with someone who doesn't look down at me for it, who isn't making it about them, who isn't judging me, shaming me, guilting me. And so, I'm really grateful for having had therapy, for my therapy training, for all the therapists that exist in the world, because you're right, there is a very important space for just acknowledging what hasn't yet been acknowledged and just being felt in that.
I feel really touched as you tell me about your client, actually, about that interaction. It's a lovely human moment.
It's like, it's really impacted me working with her, because I have been wanting, like, my goal orientated. I want this to work for her. God, I need her to move forward. Like, I need her to move forward. It's not about me. And I don't know her process. And, you know, what I sell in my coaching is, you know, I have this step-by-step process But as soon as you become my client, you will soon learn that it's a process that, okay, you go, you need step one first sometimes, and the next step is step four, and then two, and then five, and then three. Whatever you need at the time is what we do at that moment. And we've been sort of, even my perception was stuck at step one. And actually that's where more time was needed. And some people need more of the feeling before, and then they get to the creating a structure, and that bit is like instant, they get that bit, but they need more time on one element. And so again, it's in the letting go and the flow, even for us as therapists and coaches, especially for us as therapists and coaches, to allow things to just be there. And that creating that safe space to for whatever to come up. Even saying it, I can. And the more we get into, the more I learn, and I know you do this a lot as well when we have conversations. I really love how you I can see you feeling into your belly, feeling into your chest, okay, slow down, where is this being felt? Has it dropped in? No, I can't feel it. For me, I know I feel things in my throat and I'm like, no, I can't feel my body. It's here, it's tense, it's taut. And then when you spoke a moment about just letting things in and just the acceptance, and I felt my whole body just go, oh yeah, that's nice.
Yeah.
And it's just like a whole body surrender. And you know what? Most people don't get that because they don't allow it, because everything's like this. And that's why even for me, even for you, this is still a practice. It's still a practice. It's a forever lifelong practice, I think, it's not like for me riding a bike. Once you can ride a bike, you can ride a bike. And whilst I wish it was like that, and it sort of to a certain extent is, maybe I haven't worked this out quite yet, I'm kind of working it through as I talk about it and think about it, but we are so surrounded by other people being in their heads, and we are still constantly taught that smart and intellect and thinking and all of that is so important. That to be in your body still has to be a conscious practice, because we are consciously taught the opposite and thrown the opposite so much.
Yeah.
We still have to be conscious about coming back into the body. If we were just out in nature and there wasn't so much thinkiness around, I think the practice would be more like riding a bicycle. I could be entirely wrong, but it feels like if we were more in nature, around feeling, around just doing what feels good, then it would become more of a normal practice. But ego is so big and thinking is so big in the world that it just so quickly takes us back that we have to consciously come back into feeling. Does that make sense?
Oh, absolutely. And well, there's two bits to that. One is, I guess we have been raised, many of us, in an environment where cognition is the only thing that's prioritized. And there's a place for cognition, but we are central in Gestalt is the concept of holism, is thinking, feeling, being, our bodies. And there's a quote from the original Gestalt text here, which basically says what you just said. In 1951, Perls, Heffelein and Goodman said, many persons live in a permanent trance so far as non-verbal experience is concerned. And since nearly all that they are aware of is a tremendous amount of verbal thinking, they take such verbalizing as being nearly the whole extent of reality. So they're basically saying they're just living in a trance up here. They're unaware of non-verbal feelings or anything to do without cognition. And they take that to be reality. So something that Gestalt tries to do is just open up awareness of everything below the neck. Equally though, I don't want to sit here and say, well, you know, cognition doesn't have a place either. Or if someone's not feeling into their body, they're doing something wrong. Because we have another phrase, we say we meet people where they're available for meeting. Yeah. It's like, if you want to work cognitively, well, that's fine. That's where we'll start. I mean, what's really exciting about the discussion around the body and your emphasis on that, and I mean, in the last, we've had some great discussions previously about trauma as well. In the last 20 years, there's been this massive shift in our understanding of trauma. And there's been such great work done by people like Basil van der Kolk, Peter Levine, Bocelli, people putting the body right at the center of any kind of healing modality. So we're very much swimming in a really good sea right now, where body awareness is really being placed at the center of things.
I see, it's very exciting. Very exciting. And it's funny because I want to read more about it, but part of me's going, no, the point isn't to read more about it. The point is to feel more about it and experience it. But
yeah, I mean, but what I would say to that is the way these guys are writing about it is so beautiful, and it's so impactful in body terms. You know, so I read The Body Keeps the Score, which is like one of the seminal texts by Basil van der Kolk, and I was like, okay, professor of MIT, and you know, really, really important guy. And it was almost like I had a kind of imaginary suit and tie on to read it. And then as I'm reading through it, he starts to talk about, yoga, dance, drumming, creative acting classes, music. These are things which are healing in itself, are healing. And he's interesting because he started doing yoga classes. I mean, this is like a big wig professor, you know, global leader in trauma, and he started to train in yoga, and he's now also a yoga teacher.
Wow.
So it was from reading him that I got a felt sense of like the potential healing capacity of some of this stuff. And as a direct result of that, I've now started to learn yoga.
Yeah.
So it's interesting because we live in our bodies, but we are constrained to use words and text to communicate. But I think there is a way you can do it that conveys that body sense. And I think if you read these guys, it's really lovely the way they talk about it. And we can touch on that in our episode on the body, which is coming up in a few weeks, folks.
I'm excited. This has been such a beautiful conversation.
Is it worth briefly touching on spirituality?
I don't want to make it.
Would you want to park it there?
I don't want to keep.
You don't want to make it too long.
Yeah.
Yeah. Fair enough. Well, I've really appreciated this conversation. And I guess my hope is that I will have perhaps eased some of your concerns about therapy.
Yes, and reminded me that therapy isn't just therapy. Like, there are so many different kinds of therapy, and it's kind of taken me back to when I was studying therapy, and my favorite, when I remember thinking, I don't have a fucking clue how this works, but body therapy, just the concept of body. I was so in my head. This was only 4 or 5 years ago, I was so in my head. But something just made me think, I like this. I don't know why and I don't get it, but I have to learn more. This makes sense to me in a way that doesn't make sense to my brain. And I looked at the woman who was the body psychotherapist compared to the other ones, and I thought, you're weird and I like it. You're weird and I get it. And I don't get it. I kind of associate myself, connect with more the head-based thinkers over here right now. But I also know there's something about that I don't like. It's not, it doesn't work. Things aren't changing for me here. So it's funny now to reflect that actually that's where I've come to by myself. Mm.
Yeah, interesting. I mean, and equally I'd say there's coaches and there's coaches. Right, just like there's therapists and there's therapists. And also, I mean, when I decided to train in Gestalt, I went through that process. I was like, I'm going to do this course. And then I went to a Gestalt intro weekend. And I was like, I don't know why, but I just have this gut feeling I'm drawn to it. Mm-hmm. And I think the body knows. If we can listen and tune into the body is kind of naturally intelligent. And I take it as an innate spiritual sense in our bodies which can communicate to us. So
totally.
This has been a really good conversation.
So much fun. And I'm excited to do the next ones. And if you are listening and you've enjoyed this, then please let us know. Like, comment, share, subscribe, wherever we put this. I don't think we've worked that out yet. But if you're listening and you've got this far, we'd love to know your thoughts. Have you had coaching? Have you had therapy? Did you go to one and think, bloody hell, I hate this, I need the other? What's the difference been for you? Because, you know, this is just us two. But we'd love to know more about that. So share with us. We'd love to hear.
Absolutely.
Thank you so much for listening, and we'll see you next week where we'll be talking more about law of attraction. So we're going a little bit for left field of coaching and therapy, perhaps, or completely on the same realm. Who knows? We talk
both. About it.
Law of attraction, what's it got to do with us, and how does it help us, and how might it help you even probably better? Thank you so much for listening. Anthony, is there anything you want to finish with?
No, I just really appreciate this opportunity to tussle over some of this stuff. And I think there's one final quote. It's from Lynn Jacobs again. She says, there probably isn't one therapist who's suitable for everyone, but there is a therapist out there for everyone, or a coach. You could substitute therapist or coach in that. So thank you, Clea. I've really enjoyed this conversation.
Me too. See you next week.
Ciao.